Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Brad Thomas of CBS Sports will join us. We'll go over the World Cup. He does a great job with the soccer. So a few games this weekend, one on Friday, two on Saturday. The pace, the quantity of games is starting to dwindle, but that's just that's the nature of any tournament. Obviously, teams get eliminated, and it's been good. It's felt like it's been going on a long time, and it's been probably 6 weeks now. It's kept the summer moving. It's filled the summer, so before you know it, it'll be football. We are at the MLB All-Star Weekend, always a checkpoint for the baseball season. But on Friday, and we'll get to this with Brad, Spain minus 155 on the three-way line, draws plus 290, Belgium plus 425 in that one. Then you get games on Saturday, Norway and England. England minus 115 on the three-way, plus 270, draw home team Norway here, plus 310. And then Argentina and Switzerland, with Argentina being odds on minus 145, draw plus 255, and Switzerland plus 450. So Brad will have a lot of thoughts on those games, attack those from every angle. My soccer betting is basically just blindly play the draw, which was good for a while until it wasn't. So hey, if you still did nothing but play draws, you did pretty well, but it's cooled off the back half of the tournament so far. A couple things on baseball before we get to Brad, though. One is the Marlins are playing extremely well. We had a lot of people on VSiN on this podcast. I think it was Colby Markio. I don't want to improperly assign credit, but I think it was Colby Markio, and I'm trying to remember if he picked them to win the division or the playoffs. I think it was the division. I said, you know what, that might be a stretch, but playoffs, who knows? Of course, I didn't bet it, and it was a great number, so that was the right idea, and they're not going to win the division, but they look like a legitimate playoff team. As our recording, this looks like they're about to beat the Mariners here on Thursday night, and that's a team they always have pitching. Just for years now, they just have a knack for developing pitching, getting big-time arms, and they can hit a little bit this year. It's a fun team. The manager does a good job. So that to me looks like a legitimate playoff team. The other two, the Yankees salvage a split. They win the first game of the series. They win the last game of the series. So I guess no harm, no foul. If you're Tampa, maybe you're a little disappointed. Hey, we had a chance to land a knockout blow and be up. Hey, if you ever swept the series, which is asking a lot, you're up 9 and it's probably over, if not very unlikely, that the Yankees can win. But and you probably would have liked 3 or 4, but hey, when you have a 5-game lead and you hold serve, it's not the worst thing. And I'm sure from the Yankees' perspective, yeah, you would have liked to cut into the lead. And it's interesting to be up 5 going into Monday. If you're the Yankees, you sweep, it's 1, and it's a coin flip. You're dead even pretty much. And if you lose all 4, it's 9 and it feels over. So it falls right in the middle. No harm, no foul. It stays on 5. And I think both teams can kind of say, we would have liked more, but we'll take it. Yankees, we'll win the division another day. We'll try to just lick our wounds while we're beat up and just try to hold the fort until we get some reinforcements, whether it's trades, which they'll make. Man, there's not that many. I mean, guys will always get traded. It's trade deadline, but people always say this. I was doing the show with Dustin on Wednesday night. And we said, you got to get some veteran bats. There's not a lot of offense out there. First off, there's not a lot of sellers. And you look at the averages throughout Major League Baseball. It's a lot of 230, 240. It's hard to find offense, and it's hard to find good hitters that are available. So it's easier said than done, but Judge will be back. Stan will be back later. You just kind of hope if you're the Yankees that you can survive until they come back, which I'm not sure they can. Rays now minus 145 to win the division. That was pretty much a coin flip when the series started. So Yankees will be in Washington. That's always an interesting series. A little interleague battle there against the Nationals. This weekend, it will be Weathers, who was not great last time out, against Palmquist. Yankees minus 165 favorites. I would not be laying that price with Weathers and with the way the Yankees are playing. I know the Nationals don't have much pitching, but that seems like a bit of an aggressive line. The other story, and we talked a lot about Skubal, really most of the season, and where is he going to go, assuming he's going to be traded. The Tigers are going to be in an interesting predicament with Skubal here because they're right on the edge, and they are plus 475 now to win the Central. They were as high as, 15, 17 to 1, at least when I saw them. That was certainly a long number at certain points. But right now, 4 games out of a wild card spot. And 4 games out of a wild card spot are the Tigers, and 5 games out of the division. 42-50 and only 5 games out. So the division did not pull away from them, obviously. 42-50, you don't expect to be 5 games out of a division. if they made up no ground right now, I think you have to sell them. If I've always had the number, and this is out of a playoff spot, if you're three games out or less, you probably just go for it. You probably do. I don't know. It's a tough one. It's a tough one because that's a nice chip that can land you some stuff. And all right, you're three games out. What are the chances you're going to egg it in and then win again? I mean, it could happen, but that's there's a lot of calculations there for, all right, what do we really want to do? What are the offers? Remember a few years ago, Ohtani back in 2023 was going to be a free agent. Angels weren't going anywhere. And they said, well, we're not going to trade him. We're going to buck conventional wisdom and we'll just hold on to him for reasons that are unknown. And they could have had a big time package return back with Junior Cameron Arrow, who's now one of the best players in the sport. So tough. I would say if you make up some ground, they probably go for it. But if you don't make up any ground or you lose ground, you are clear sellers. They're right on that fringe zone. That'll be an interesting scenario to unfold. I like when a guy like Scooble gets traded at the deadline too. It gives it some excitement. It reminds me of Randy Johnson back in the day getting traded to the Astros. Anytime you have an elite, like best pitcher in the sport type of guy getting traded middle of the season, that makes it fun. See where he lands, all those things. So I'd say right now, I guess 60-40 they trade him. That would be my guess, 60-40 they trade him, just because you do have to make up a few games here. And thing is, when you dig yourself that deep of a hole, you got to dig out and play so well just to kind of get around the fringes of a spot. Now you got to play well and keep going. I mean, you guys have to win so many games, but they're not that far out of it. And the division and the wild card are within reach enough where it's attainable. So other series that are interesting this weekend, Guardians and Marlins. Mentioned the Marlins playing well. That's a fun series, little 1997 World Series rematch there. And the Phillies play the Tigers, so that's another big series where, hey, if you're the Tigers and you get swept, you're probably starting to think about being sellers. And if you sweep, obviously we're dealing with extremes, but if you sweep, all right, we're in this thing. So these games become ultra, ultra important for the Tigers, not just to get the wins instead of the losses, but to keep yourself as buyers or at least neutral and not selling. Scooble here. Red Sox at Citi Field. Noah McClain going for the Mets, minus 136. Sonny Gray, plus 113 for Boston. Nothing I really like here. I mentioned this on some other shows. I don't know if I was in this podcast or just doing the live shows. And it's come to fruition a little bit. Junior Cameron Arrow had been so hot. I just figured, you know, maybe playing him to walk on a nightly basis might be a good way to attack some of these games. But he's a free swinger. I had him the other day. I think it was Sunday where it was a 2-0 count. And then the next three pitches were out of nobody else swung at him. So I had him to walk. I think it was the first at bat. And you get five balls. You're 2-0 in the count. And then you see three more balls and you strike out on, you know, I think he struck out eventually. So that's obviously a part of the handicap. But let's do a little World Cup, maybe a little college football. Brad Thomas, CBS. That is next. This should have been more podcast. All right, we are back. Should have bet more podcast. And he is back. Brad Thomas, I would list all the places you're working, but you're everywhere. CBS, PGA Tour, BetUS. How has the World Cup been for you so far? How has the betting been? How have you been enjoying it?
World Cup's been fantastic, right? I think from a brand perspective, the World Cup has really elevated my brand from a personal level, whether that's different TV spots, different YouTube spots, different podcast spots. It's been fantastic. From a betting perspective, it's been interesting. I started the tournament like the first 2 days on fire, and I went through like probably one of the worst spells I had in betting. And it was funny because I was like, did I just like lose my touch or something? At one point I was down, like I'm a one unit better, down 10 units in the World Cup. And obviously like, you know, bad runs happen, but it was kind of weird. Fast forward, you know, we're killing it now. All the futures are coming in and I don't want it to end, right? Like it feels unfair, the amount of money that we're making, and we can only do this once every 4 years.
Do you like it better with this one game a day, one game at a time? Did you like the beginning more when it's more of a March Madness feel? What's your preference in terms of the
schedule?
From
a viewer perspective, I probably liked it more like when there was a ton of games. I had a really hard time from a betting perspective kind of keeping up with the day, or like the swings were really bad. Like I also feel like, so in soccer, you can have your baseline bets out already, but really, like, to be a really sharp prop better, you need lineups. Like, you can make all the notes and stuff you want and make all the bets you want, but there's so many small nuances that change as lineups change, where if you don't have lineups, you're kind of screwed. And luckily, FIFA did a lot better job than normal domestic leagues. They'd have the lineups like an hour and a half out early instead of just 1 hour. So it kind of helped a lot, but at times it did become a little stressful, especially when teams would make wholesale changes.
All right, before we get to the weekend games, the USA team, how would you grade their performance overall?
Overall, B+. I grade it differently than probably a lot of casual USA fans, because they graded on a scale that I think is a little unfair. They graded on a scale of expectation, not realistic expectations. They thought the United States was going to win the World Cup, which never in a million years was that going to happen. The talent just wasn't there. The depth just wasn't there. And that's not a bad thing, right? Like, United States soccer is what it is. It's a C-tier product in terms of competitiveness. But when we play against our own region, play in our own federation, our own division, it's a A+ product. And I do think some people might have had a sour taste left in their mouths after we lost to Belgium and how we lost to Belgium. But I never had us coming out of that match. And one thing that I have to add too is, like, people have to remember that the United States were in pot one, whatever they call it, where we had the best possible outcome for our group. So, of course, yes, we're going to win. Of course, it's going to be a lot closer in some of those tough matches, because the tough matches, like Turkey, was a lot different than a tough match than having England, France, or Spain or Brazil.
All right, let's get to the games. One game on Friday, 3:00 Eastern. It is not the U.S. It is Belgium and Spain. Spain is -300 to qualify. Belgium is +230. What, if anything, have you bet here? How do you look at the game?
Yeah, I bet a couple things in this game. First and foremost, Belgium are overmatched, right? And I do feel there's going to be a little bit of an emotional dump, a letdown spot in this match for Belgium. Weirdly enough, the Belgian side, and I've been talking about this on X, they were pretty perturbed by what the United States did and said about them. And it was like, we are ants in the game of football compared to Belgium. Like, I understand fans. Fans are one thing, right? If fans are like, oh, this is BS, how could you? I get it. But as far for their starting goalkeeper to be like, we addressed the disrespect that they showed us while they're still inside a tournament is like really weird to me. Like, it should have been like onward the next, but now they play against Spain, and I do feel like that emotional letdown is going to happen. I don't trust this Belgian backside. So the first bet I took, the line's moved by 5 cents, but I still think it's playable. Spain team total over 1.5. It was -140. I think -145 is still good. We have been waiting for this Spain attacking explosion, but the teams they've played really haven't come out of their shell, and they've made it very difficult to score goals. Belgium won't play like that. Belgium will be a side that will play not open, but they will try to go on the attack, and they won't sit all the way in a low block, maybe deploy a mid block and try to win the midfield battle. I don't know if they can, but I think that's probably where they find their strength in this matchup. Another bet I took a couple of Lamine Yamal bets. Lamine Yamal is in the best possible, matchup that he's had in this tournament in terms of a team that's going to play, going to get up down the pitch, try to enter the final third. He's up against Maxime de Kuyper, the Brighton Hove Albion, wing back. And he just had a match with Nuno Mendes, and the night and day difference of caliber of player, physicality of player, size of player is insane. I think Lamine Yamal is going to have a goal or an assist in this. And for him to score or assist being at -109 is incredible. So I took that. I haven't taken it yet. I just kind of want to see what I do in the French game, because I wouldn't say this is like a bet that has value. But if I get crushed in France, it'll be how big I bet it. I'm going to take him to have at least one goal and at least one assist. Hasn't had that yet in this tournament. I think this is the match to do it.
Saturday, 5:00 Eastern, England -225 to advance, Norway +180, and the draw here +270. The draws were a very good bet for a lot of the tournament, kind of dried up recently, but what if anything do you like here?
Yeah, and this is going to be speaking more to those who have the boosts, the odds boosts, because I think this is a good place to deploy it. I like both teams to score. This line got away from us a little bit, and I don't have the odds in front of me, but I'd imagine by now it's probably, at this time of you guys listening, it's probably minus 155, minus 160. I like that more than both teams to score on over 2.5, even though I would advocate both teams to score on over 2.5 at plus 110. I just have a feeling that by the time you're listening to this show, that price is going to be long gone, and I wouldn't play BTTS in over 2.5, but I would use the odds boost on both teams to score. I think this is at the bare minimum 1-1. First, we've seen this Norway side kind of get disrespected by Brazil. Brazil didn't act like the powerful giants, and I don't know what their idea was, saying we're going to absorb a ton of pressure and just believe that Norway are going to make mistakes at the back when we counter. Like, it should have been in the inverse. It should have been Brazil applying the pressure, flexing their muscles, showing that they're the strongest team in this tournament, and they didn't. What happened in that match was the inevitable. Erling Haaland scoring a goal. I can't sit here and say this English defense has been anything to write home about. This is a team that went all of World Cup qualification without conceding a goal, now has conceded multiple goals to Mexico, Croatia, should have conceded multiple goals to DR Congo. It has been anything but a defensive masterclass. And it's weird because you have a master tactician defensively in Thomas Tuchel, and he can't figure out the recipe. But I'll say that doesn't come as a surprise. Anybody who follows world football, especially those who cover European football, the defensive selections were the start. And I think this is a both teams to score just because of the defensive selections for England. And we don't need to talk about the English attack. England can score on the best of them, right? Jude Bellingham's playing out of his mind. They have Harry Kane. And then on the right side, Noni Madueke or Bukayo Saka. Or on the left side, Anthony Gordon or Marcus Rashford, right? So many interchangeable pieces. In terms of who's going to qualify, I do think the double pivot of, oh my God, I'm drawing a blank now, Elliot Anderson and Declan Rice is tough for anybody to kind of compete with, contend with for an entire 90 minutes. But I mean, Norway are going to give it a go because they have a full belief in themselves, in their squad. So it should be a fun, compelling game. I just like both teams to score for right now.
And then on Sunday, Argentina minus 145, draw plus 255, and then Switzerland plus 450.
Yeah. Wow. Part of me wants to be like, Argentina have shown the chinks in their armor. There's no better time than now to fade this Argentina side. But after we just watched the most disgusting game of football in our entire lives, Colombia versus Switzerland, how do we, with full confidence, go back and say, yeah, I want to bet this. Yeah, I want to trust Switzerland to do anything in this match. The defense for Argentina has been less than stellar, and we can all agree on that. But I haven't seen anything out of the Switch side that matches up with what we saw leading into this tournament. Leading into this tournament, I was really high on Switzerland. And I feel quite fortunate. Well, I feel quite fortunate to cash Switzerland to win their group, because even though they dominated Canada 2-1, it wasn't a 2-1 match. Like, the scoreboard might say 2-1, but that could have easily been 2-1 in the inverse, or a 1-1, or a 2-2. They also lost Yoan Manzabi, who has been electric off the bench starting. And I think that's going to play a greater role, not just in his ability in the match, but his ability to push those who are fighting for starting time, right? Like Dan Andoy wants to play, doesn't want to be on the bench for Manzabi. Ruben Vargas doesn't want to be on the bench for Manzabi, so on and so forth. So for me, I just feel like this Argentina side is so much better. I don't think Argentina are going to fall until later in the tournament. So I think you're fine taking minus 0.75 at minus 110. I think if you are looking for plus money, you could take Argentina to win in over 1.5 goals. My only problem is, if Switzerland play like they played against Colombia, they're going to try to see this out 0-0 and win this thing in extra time or penalties. And that means there might not even be two goals in the match. But I just don't trust either team enough to be taking money line and unders at this point in the tournament.
All right. Has the World Cup cut into your prep for college football? What percentage would you say are done? Or what's your college football outlook here? We're getting there. All-star break means all-star break in baseball means college football can't be too far away. Where are you at here?
You know, it's a weird, I'm in a weird situation right now. Obviously, I'm always looking at college football. I'm looking at it through a different lens this year. For those who don't know, I host an Ohio State football podcast every Monday, 7 p.m., called The Horseshoe Hangover on YouTube. And my focus this year has been really heavily on Ohio State football, but also recruiting. I'll be stepping into a role as a high school, college recruiting analyst, hosting a show. And so I've been like, I feel like I know these teams really well, but I think I'm going to know them even better as years come. And I've always been obsessed with recruiting, but it's obviously different when that's like your sole focus of a show. So like, I'm excited about this season, but I'm excited for the other parts of the season, National Signing Day, dead period, all that.
Do you have a sleeper? Are you there yet in terms of, I know you mentioned, I think it was BYU a couple weeks ago when we had you on VEASAN that you liked.
Yeah, I picked 12. BYU to win the Big 12. They're my sleeper to win the conference. I don't think they'll be a national championship contender, but I thought they were a, wow, as we're recording this, you know, France is playing, there's a penalty, so this caught my attention. But I don't think that they're going to win the national championship. Sleepers are hard this year, right? Because every year there's some darling that comes on, that, but every year that team has something where you can kind of, you go look back and say, oh yeah, like Indiana was a good team 2 years ago, but they didn't win in the trenches and they went and addressed the trenches and that brought them to the next level. Like maybe Texas A&M, but Texas A&M is a weird situation because they're going to have all of the weapons. They're going to have everything, trenches, running back, wide receiver, secondary. It's all up to Marcel Reed. But if he takes that next step at 20-1, Texas A&M is dangerous. But they have a tough schedule. It's not like that cupcake like they had last year. So for me, it'd probably be Texas A&M. That's like, I don't think I could go further down the odds board. And listen, I know a lot of people are going to be, Brad, why aren't you betting Alabama? And Will, there's actually nothing to dislike about Alabama. I think a lot of people are down on the Crimson Tide this year, but they're going to have easily the best secondary in the country. Not the best cornerback tandem. Obviously, that belongs to Notre Dame, but Bray Hubbard, Keon Sabb, the safeties. Then you have Dijon Lee and Zaven Brown as the safeties. And then as a secondary, as the corners, that's like the best four in the country. The question for them is going to be always what it was last year, and that's the offensive line. But what Alabama did was they got bigger on both sides of the ball. They got more length, got more size, because I felt like they thought they were pushed around. I don't know if that's going to be a, I don't know if that's a 1 year project or a 2 year project. So it might be a year early on Alabama. I'm not high on this Ole Miss team. I actually think they get downgraded with Pete Golding as their coach. You can't have a defensive coach, defensive-minded coach as your coach who can't run defenses, right? Ole Miss hasn't put out a good defense in ages. I could drink the Kool-Aid for USC, but I still think they're going to be a little too soft. So I'm probably going as far as Texas A&M.
Yeah, and I forget where I heard this question the other day. It was an interesting one, the way it was phrased. If you had to make a line, Alabama will win a national title in the next 10 years. Yes is a favorite, no is a favorite. What's that line? Because I think the guys, whoever I was listening to, I can't remember who it was, said basically a coin flip. Maybe they would bet no. I don't know. What's your take on that?
Next 10 years? I'd bet yes. I'd bet yes because there's two things that Alabama have going for them. Number one, they have one of the best, the smartest coaches, right? The smartest offensive minds. And what Kalen DeBoer's done, or what not he's done, but what his plan is pretty evident. He's going to stack this team in waves. I don't think Alabama will ever be Alabama again. I don't think any school will be that. No dynasties in the NIL period. But he's going to continue to stack and stack and stack in waves. And what that means is, he's going to have a top five recruiting class take one off. Top five recruiting class take one off. But every recruiting class, what he's done is brought in a five-star quarterback. So for him, he thinks he can get away with some of those bad classes as long as he has that man because he doesn't want to spend money in the transfer portal. I think another thing that's going to happen to Alabama within the next 10 years is the salary cap, right? Like, no offense to these Big Ten schools, but like when money is equal, it's going to be really hard to convince somebody to go play in the snow, to live in a cold climate when they're making the same amount of money anywhere. So I think that he'll have that going for him. I believe that's going to be within the next 5 years thing where that will be changed.
Last thing, and the thing I really like about this college football season, is we'll start to dive into it more. There's a lot of quarterbacks returning, a lot of big name quarterbacks. It's not one of these years, and I felt like this the past couple of years to an extent, where you have to relearn the entire sport. All right, who's where? You're basically resetting, restarting. There's a lot of guys. There's a good, you look at the Heisman odds, a good 15, 20 names you recognize right away. That part I enjoy. All right. And I know Georgia's a team I've talked about. I'll probably talk about them a little bit here in the next week or so as we start doing more of that. Just a pretty favorable schedule at Alabama, at Ole Miss. But other than that, it's, you know, they avoid Texas, Texas A&M, LSU, Tennessee. They're supposedly much better defensively. That was an issue for them last year. So should be fun. Brad, great time of the year.
Wait, you
want to
say,
for you.
Let me say something about Georgia. So, you know, I talked about this recruiting thing. And, Will, dude, like, I actually went out for a job to be a recruiting analyst, like, full-time. Didn't get it, but that's neither here nor there. I think what Kirby Smart's doing is really interesting. Georgia's having a down year in recruiting, but where Georgia is spending their money is in the trenches. I think Georgia believes that as long as they can win the trenches, they'll be successful in college football. And in their down years, they always want to have trench work.
Brad, you're a busy guy. I appreciate you making the time. Let us know where we can find you.
You can find me on X at Mr. Brad Thomas. If you want to watch any of my shows, I go on about 4 days a week on CBS Sports Network at 6 p.m. in the 6 p.m. window on CBS Primetime. And then you can find me on Sportsline at sportsline.com.
All right, that'll do it. Rate, review, subscribe. I got to do a contest. Try to get some of these reviews up. I think I've been stuck on like 78 on Apple for a while. So if anyone has a second to leave a review, a 5-star review, it would be much appreciated. Enjoy the weekend. We'll be back on Monday. See you then.